You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas with Hot Texas Swing Band.
And this... Yeah. Oh, no, go ahead.
No.
We're so excited. We tumble all over the place, as you know, if you watch regularly. We're so excited that you're with us tonight for episode 143, which will... available immediately after this live stream, and then a little later tonight you can get the audio on Podbean and all the major podcast platforms. Hey, who's our guest tonight?
Who is our guest tonight? Elizabeth Rhodes. And we got this book, Haggard House.
Oh my goodness. What a book.
What house?
Welcome, Elizabeth. We are so delighted to have you with us tonight. Oh my goodness. Where are you joining us from?
I am joining from California, Orange County, California. Thank you so much for having me too. It's really great to be here. I'm really excited to talk about this with you. As you know, it's been a work of quite a while.
Yes, and when you reached out to us, the book was not, you had a publication date. But it wasn't really quite ready. You had a PDF. I mean, it was ready, but it was not available yet to the public. So when does Haggard House become available officially to the public?
So officially, it's coming out very soon, just in 5 days. So on Tuesday, on July 15th, it will come out.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So are you getting any sleep?
No. I think I haven't slept in the last month, probably.
What kinds of things, you have some things planned to go along with the launch? What have you got going on?
Yeah, there's a couple of exciting things coming up. So one is there's going to be a launch party where I live here in California, in Tustin, at Arvida Book Co. So there'll be a launch party. Author Candy Sari is going to be interviewing me. She wrote a really wonderful novel called Magdalena. It's a ghost story, which I highly recommend you read if you haven't. But she'll be interviewing me, and there will be a Q&A afterwards, and then, of course, book signing. So that will be on Saturday, July 19th at Arvida Book Co. at 4:30 p.m.
Now, the book takes place in Michigan. Are you heading that direction at all?
I am, yeah. So I also have a kind of mini book tour planned. And so that's going to be for the first month of, or I'm sorry, the first 2 weeks of August. And I'll be going up and down the state. I'll be even going up into the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where the story happens to be set, as you know. And I'll put all of those dates, and it's still in the scheduling phase. So some of them haven't been fully booked, but I'll put all of that on my social media. And I think we'll talk about that at the end. I'll share those.
Yeah. Oh, exciting.
I am very excited. That's why I haven't slept in a month.
You can always sleep later.
That's right. That's what I'm thinking. I hope I can.
Well, Jim has a bio, I think, to kind of start us off.
We have a little bio. Tonight's featured guest, Elizabeth Rhodes, is the author of numerous short stories in tonight's featured book, Haggard House. She holds a BA in theater and is the vice president of the California Writers Club, Orange County Branch. Since 2021, she has been a volunteer and juror for the Scholastic Writing Awards. Originally from Michigan, she and her husband now live in California. All right.
So we learned a little bit about you in the bio, but maybe you'd like to share a little bit more. What else would you like to tell us?
Definitely. I've been writing for quite a long time. I actually originally started in I've been writing since I was a kid, so that's always been an interest. But I actually was initially more drawn to theater and acting. So I actually got my degree in theater. I got a BA in theater, and my goal was to become an actress. I went to a school out in the Los Angeles area with the goal of, getting on the silver screen, and I just thought, oh, year, and this should be good. I'll be done. I'll have, a career. It doesn't quite work like that. So yeah, I was doing a lot of auditioning, and I think someone actually, another actor that I connected with, told me that the rule of thumb in LA is that it takes about 10 years for you to become a working actor, and that's getting, bit roles. That's not, that's not the silver screen. So I was a little bit disheartened by that. And I was trying to figure out what to do. I thought I would move back to the Midwest. Well, I'm kind of figuring things out. And I around that time is when I started to write more. In college, I had taken a screenwriting class, and that was really fun. And I kept writing screenplays. And then it kind of just continued from there. I was writing more and more.
You have a question, I know. No?
Did you have a day job at that time? Were you doing any commercials at all or anything like that as far as acting was concerned?
As far as acting was concerned, no, not really. I never really broke into that. I did have a lot of different day jobs. Many different types of things, but yeah, unfortunately, the acting, it didn't really pan out the way that I had dreamed or hoped, but it's all good because I found my calling, which was writing.
I wondered, I have just a theater background, nothing like what you had or what you pursued, but I couldn't help but think, especially as I was reading the book, and then when I learned that about you, it kind of made even more sense. You have a flair as a writer of capturing the mood and your scenes, especially the scenes that take place in Haggard House and in some other places, the school and some other, as though we were on stage and we're looking at how the characters are handling a prop or how they're moving, stage direction, how you have them moving from one part of the room or what all, up and down the attic stairs or whatever. And your dialogue is so very riveting that I thought to myself, does have you found that your experience in theater has informed your writing or how you go about writing? Or am I just a crazy woman?
Well, I don't think you're a crazy woman. I think it affected it more subconsciously, I would say, the theater aspect. Because of course, in theater, you're exposed to a lot of dialogue. So I think that certainly helped. Being in plays, of course, you have to learn the dialogue and then you have to speak it. So you're really embodying it. I think that part of it probably was one of the biggest helps. The scenery, not so much. So it's interesting because when I'm writing, I actually imagine it more as a movie. I think theater is more, you have this sense of, that it's fake. The audience and you both know it's not real, but the audience comes along with you. A movie, you both know that it's not real. The, film producers, the actors, everyone knows it's not real. The audience knows it's not real, but there's a close, you feel closer to it and it has less of that sense of divide. And so when I'm writing, I actually think more in terms of almost a movie where I want you to feel like you really are there and observing this closely, but it's not something that you truly know is not real, where you would do with the theater.
There's a scene. I don't know if you remember this scene, but there's a scene where two of our main characters, Adam and Penny, are out kind of in the woods. And there's a lot of things that go out in the woods, but they're in this area of young trees. And it is so vivid. And I think, and when I read that scene, it was like a movie to me. Once I ended, I kind of, what are they doing? Tell us, just give us a little something. It's not that I've introduced it. Tell us.
Sure. So I don't think it'll spoil anything if I share about that scene. So essentially in this scene that Bobby Jean is talking about, there are two characters, Adam and Penny, and Adam has come up with this game in the woods where there's these young saplings. They're pretty tall, but the trunks are quite thin. And so his game is he kind of shimmies up the trunk, and once he gets to the highest point, his weight will take him down. And it's kind of like a, I don't know, I guess it may be like a 19th century version of roller coaster feeling where, you know, you're coming down really quickly. And so he's having a good time and he shows his game to Penny. And so they do it together. And this is the whole scene. He's kind of teaching her his game and she has a really nice time. That was something that was inspired by my own real experience when I was a kid. I did that in the woods. So that was something that was in a way easy for me to write because I just thought, okay, how did that work? And then kind of copied it.
Well, and it also is a fun little bit of levity. There's, as a reader, it's like, oh, this is fun. Oh, okay, you know.
That's great to hear.
Do you want to?
We ready for the, what inspired?
Yeah, there we go. Ask that question. Yeah.
You had a unique answer, I think, when you asked this the other day.
Yeah. So what inspired the story? When I was younger, I grew up in Michigan. The story is also set in Michigan. So, I think as a writer, you're sometimes thinking, how can I do less research? That helped. I grew up there. Growing up, we lived in a very rural area. There was, people went hunting and did things like that. And, there was one day when my brother, actually on the way home, he hit a deer with his car and he didn't want to waste the meat. So he just brought the deer home with him on the car and we ended up butchering it for the meat. And basically there's not too much. I mean, there are some things you could do with them, but there's not too much you could do with the head and the legs of the deer. So we got this great idea that we would use the head to scare my sister. And so we propped the head up on a post hole digger inside our barn. And then we sent my sister out there. And as soon as she opened the door, she's just face to face with this deer head. And she was quite surprised. She had a pretty big reaction.
Imagine.
Yes, as you can probably imagine. But that was actually the initial image that I had for this story is just this woman finds these heads at her door and who's doing it and how did they get there. And that was really the initial image that started the whole story off.
That was interesting. That's an interesting story. Now, does she still talk to you or?
Surprisingly, yes.
Well, this is too much fun. We are talking to our special featured guest tonight, Elizabeth Rhodes, and this is her book, Haggard House. We're going to get into it in more detail in just a moment. Before that, we'd like to go ahead and tell you a little bit about two of our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. If you are a writer and you maybe need some assistance at expanding your social media presence, or maybe it's time to refresh a website or actually have a website, they are standing by to assist you. Let's listen to our spot for Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experience,
trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rhonda with a Writer with Elizabeth Rhodes and her book, Haggard House. What kind of Haggard House like, Elizabeth?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Yeah.
What's that house like, Haggard House?
Oh, what's the house like? So, so this house in this story, it's an old colonial home. And initially the character that discovers it, he thinks it's going to be a great home for his wife. And he buys it without knowing it has this really dark kind of haunted past. And as the story progresses, there's a windstorm that takes place in the village, and the house actually has sort of a imploding effect where all the boards are sucked inwards because of this windstorm. And so the villagers start to call this place Haggard House. And as the story unfolds, you kind of discover what the dark secret of this house is and how it's connected to all the different characters in different ways.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the writing process from when you started to where you're 5 days away from publication?
Well, it's been a very long process. It's from the very beginning, from the starting of writing till now, it's been 5.5 years. So it was about 4 years in the writing of it, and then another year and a half to bring it to publication. So initially I started with what was a very short draft, we'll say. I think I wrote the first draft in a couple of months, and it was extremely short. And I sent it to my friend, and she said, well, it's interesting, but you know, it might need some more fleshing out. So I kind of continued to work on it and continued to add, and would send it back to my friends and family for feedback, and then it would get more added to it. And then eventually it got to the point where I didn't think that I could really take it further on my own. I had gotten enough feedback and I had, you know, done what I thought was the best that I could do. And at that point I thought, well, I know it's not as good as it could be. So at that point I ended up working with an editor, and actually before she even worked on the editing, she told me, you need to do more research for the book. She said, you know, it's probably not even worth your time to work with me until you've done a bit more research on this. So I said, okay, I can do that. And admittedly, I had been a bit lazy initially about doing the research. I just kind of wrote it and was hoping for the best. Doesn't really work that way, as it turns out. So I did a lot of research at that point. And that really helped the story, not just because it made it more authentic in terms of the time period, but also because it gave me a lot of these little details that I never would have come up with on my own. For instance, I think something we chatted about was the bread in this story. There was a particular kind of bread, which in this story they call it milk emptying's bread. It would have also been called salt rising bread. But essentially this bread, it's a very quick rising bread because it's risen not with yeast, but with bacteria. And actually it's a bacteria that is associated with gangrene. And once the bread is cooked, all of the bacteria is killed off, safe to eat. But that's something, you know, this minor detail, this specific type of bread, I never would have found that if I hadn't done the research. So it was very helpful in kind of putting all these little details throughout this story that I think really helped make it more real and hopefully more fun for the reader.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you read that and you know our main characters, that's their primary meal 3 times a day. You think, I can't believe these people would eat this. Like every day, they continue to read it.
We will tell you as readers that sitting down to the dinner table with these characters. There are some meals where it's kind of hard to imagine actually enjoying what is being fed and then served. And then there's some other places where, oh, how lovely. Oh, I want to go have their house. You just have to read the book to find out.
That's right.
You know, when you talk about research, you know, and when I asked you the other night when we were talking, if you were a student of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Because we sure bring out a lot of those facts into the story.
Scripture, yes.
Yeah.
It's been interesting. Did you spend a long time at that, or had you already known it?
She just got them right, you know, they just flew right up.
Well, actually,
Malachi 6:94.
That's right. No, I did have to look up the verses. I didn't know those off the top of my head. But that being said, I did grow up reading. I grew up very religious and grew up reading the Bible daily. So a lot of that kind of flowed naturally. That was the one part where I didn't have to do as much research because I kind of had a lot of that in my head. And that was very helpful because it's actually a huge piece of the story and almost the backbone piece of the story. So it was very helpful to kind of have that in the back of my mind. And then I kind of had an idea of some of the verses and things I wanted to work in there that made the story make sense. So that's kind of how that happened. But I'm not a biblical scholar or anything by any means.
Well, when you're talking about doing research and how important that was, because this is historical fiction. It's a lot of different, we could put it in a number of different genres, but it is historical fiction. We are kind of grounded in 1828 and then later in 1857. We actually had the Civil War happen. We're not engaged in it, but we kind of pass, you know, through those years too. So all of that really helped to ground it in that piece of the reality of historical fiction. I wondered a little bit about why did you choose those time periods for this story?
Yeah, so, well, I think having the story set in the mid-1800s, that part was easy. That was kind of it was part of the kind of initial vision that I had of the woman with the head at her door. It wasn't a modern house. It was a, you know, kind of Victorian era house. And I think probably a lot of that just comes down to the fact that that's my favorite era to read from. Those stories are literature from that era is my favorite to read. I just enjoy watching, you know, period pieces, you know, BBC, Masterpiece Theater, all of these older stories that were set in that particular time period, basically mid-1800s. So I knew it was going to be set then. So I then kind of had a little bit of a puzzle to put together because I knew that one of the characters, he's a fur trader in the story. He had to be far enough in the past that the fur trade would have still been pretty abundant because the fur trade was starting to die out, especially as you got towards the 1830s. And so I thought he has to, you know, the timelines kind of have to match up. He has to be of a certain age in order to be in this story later at a certain age. So I kind of situated everything around when the fur trade was dying off. And then that became, you know, do some math, you know, fast forward. Okay, 1859 is where the main piece of the story starts. So it's kind of not the most fun for me to try to figure out the math on that. But I think, you know, I wrote down a timeline and I figured everything out. So hopefully it all matches up. Maybe don't check my work, but.
Well, I messed up real well. Yeah, I thought you did a real good job on that. And weaving in the fur trade and weaving in the railroad.
Yeah, railroad. That's so interesting what you bring up about railroad.
You know, I have to say for historical fiction, you have a lot of twists and turns and a lot of surprises.
Oh, my goodness.
The book reads like, you know, like a mystery.
You know,
and all of a sudden this happens. It's like, and uh-oh, this happened too, you know, and I didn't think this character was going to be like that. And you think, again, this terrible thing occurred?
I was thinking back to my very favorite book from forever is Great Expectations by Charles Dickens. And I think it's because of the first, I think it's partly because it was the first Charles Dickens book that I ever read. Mm. There's a character right in the beginning that little young Pip meets. And, you know, you're just reading along and you just, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. And then later on in the book, that character from the very beginning is suddenly a major character. And Miss Elizabeth, that's how I felt about this book, that you introduce characters that, if we're not really savvy readers and we're looking for things, you know, we would just keep reading along. And then that twist and turn that happens later and you go, oh, and then you have to go back to the pages like, wait a minute, I think that's so-and-so. So we love that as readers. We really love that.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to hear that. And actually, I can't tell you how happy I am to hear that you thought of that story, because Charles Dickens is my favorite author. So.
Yeah, all right. Look at it.
One of the other things that's been said about this book is it's a political thriller and it's kind of dark and dazzling. And one of our characters, we have the house, we have Hagrid House, but we have Hagrid House on another level. Do you want to touch on that, or shall we just let the reader be inquisitive and want to read the book to find out what do we mean by that?
Well, I think I can. Yeah, I think I can kind of maybe. Well, I'll more than hint at it. I'll say what it is, but I think it will hopefully pique readers' interest. So there's obviously the physical Hagrid House. I talked a little bit about how that came into being. But there's another Hagrid House. So maybe I'll just kind of say the premise of the story is that there's this character, his name is Adam, and he grows up in what I would essentially call a cult of one family. So his family has very severe religious beliefs and very strange, but it's just his family. And so he kind of ends up forming a relationship or a friendship with this young girl who's completely outside of this belief system that he's grown up in. And in his effort to try to make these two worlds, have both of these worlds in his life and not reject the girl as his friend, he starts to build some mental rooms, these rooms in his mind. And then those rooms kind of come into friction. And that is the secondary Hagrid House, mm-hmm. which is the one that's within his own mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a very, mm-hmm. That's a very you want to read it. Is that right? You want to really get it. Elizabeth, we're going to step away again for just a moment. This is so much fun. Are you having fun?
Yeah, this is great. Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
We're going to step away for just a moment and tell you about one of the places that you can order the books of many of our author guests, including you can actually pre-order Hagrid House there. And that is our Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And I know that you might be listening to this podcast months from now, but if you're listening live, they are offering free shipping today, July 10th through tomorrow, July 11th, 2025. And you can order her book. When we come back, we're going to meet some of the characters we've been teasing you about that Hagrid House. Don't go away. We will be right back.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking to Elizabeth Rose in Haggard House.
Haggard House.
You know, Elizabeth, you kind of tell the story in multiple ways of view, different characters. And what character do you want to talk about first?
Do you want to ask your favorite question first?
Well, did they ever surprise you? We know you get control on these folks, but do you ever kind of step out of line?
Yes, these characters did surprise me, all of them in some way or another. A little unsettling, but I think, when we chatted about it earlier, I did have an initial idea of how the story would begin, and I knew how it would end. But there's so much middle ground that you have to cover in a story. I mean, the novel is 370 pages. So you can imagine, you know, I had maybe the first three chapters and the last chapter. There's a lot to go in between that. So putting all of those pieces together, how the characters interacted and what ended up happening and different elements that came into the story were really surprising. Probably one of the more surprising things that happened, and this happened pretty late in the novel, but the entire novel had been written in third person. I wrote it that way and shared it with someone, a friend that gave me really good feedback, and I really admire her as a writer, and I really admired what she said, because she said, I think that maybe this should be in first person and you should have it from different characters' points of view. And she actually sent me a copy of Faulkner's As I Lay Dying. And she said, you know, this is kind of what I thought of. And I had actually thought of putting it in first person before and didn't want to do it because I wrote the whole thing in third person. And you could probably imagine how much work it is to rewrite an entire story from different characters' points of view, all in first person. Mm-hmm. I had no interest in doing that. But since she said it, and since I had already thought of it myself, I just thought I have to at least try it. So I started switching, and it was really interesting because as soon as I started switching into first person, it was like the whole novel just really clicked into place. Like everything was just like, it just went together like these puzzle pieces. And one of the more surprising things that happened, so it's told in five points of view, mostly through Adam and Penny. They're kind of the main characters that I mentioned earlier. And then there's a couple other characters, but there's one single chapter by Adam's mother. And that chapter was a total surprise to me. I didn't know that it was going to be in there. And I wrote it in one sitting, and I'm glad it was in one sitting because I don't know if I would have wanted to be in that character's mind for more than one sitting, as strange as that sounds. So it was, they definitely did take on a life of their own.
That chapter is so important though, in the telling of the story. I'm so glad that her voice is heard, that we get to hear from her directly. Yeah. This book, I believe, is going to be available in an Audible version. Yes.
Yes, so it is.
You have gifted us with two very short clips that Sam Haston of Light Talk Radio, our producer and engineer. The first clip is about Penny, I believe. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that? And then I think Sam will play that clip.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm very lucky. I got to do this audiobook and work with some really amazingly talented voice actors. So the actress that does Penny, her name is Lauren Lewis. And she actually studied at the Drama Center in London, and she's done a lot of theater and film and radio. She has such an amazing voice. You'll hear it in a second. But she's doing Penny. And in this particular clip, Penny has just found what we'll say is a gruesome gift outside of her door. And Adam has stood up to the person that they think might have left this gruesome gift. So this is that's the clip that we're going to play.
Okay. So here is Penny, number one.
As I turned back, I saw Adam's figure clearly. Whatever was within me that made up my essence, whether it was my soul or something else, rose before me like a white fog. And Adam's figure, whatever made up his essence, rose too like black smoke. The two joined, creating a gray mist. Just as suddenly the vision vanished, and I was left to wonder whether I had seen anything more than fog from the other student's breath.
That's Penny.
That's Penny. So, hopefully that gets you to want to listen to the audiobook now.
Yeah. All right. So, then the other character.
Adam
Bolton. Tell us a little bit more about Adam.
Yeah. So, Adam, as I mentioned, again, I just feel really lucky that I got to work with these really great voice actors. So, Adam's voice is done by Rocco Narva, and actually this is his debut as an audiobook voice, but he's done a ton of stuff commercially and promotionally. He even did a promo for The Big Bang Theory. He has a wonderful voice also. Again, I just feel so lucky to have these people reading my work. But in this particular piece, Adam has just taken a long journey. We talked a little bit about how he works on a railroad. So he goes out west and he's working on the Union Pacific Railroad. And that's this clip that's coming up.
Well, this is Adam, clip number two.
It was early afternoon when I came upon the end of the line just beyond the town of Ogallala. There it was, tracks spanned out in the dirt, grading, a good 2 feet above ground level, running beyond as far as the eye could see. As I made my way from the rail carriage in which I had ridden to the end of the track, I saw what appeared to be a veritable army. Men, so many that they appeared as ants, horse-drawn wagons, full of iron rails, rail carriages full of supplies, pulled right up to the end of the track, and a large herd of bellowing cattle trailing in the distance.
Oh, those scenes at the railroad.
Great clip.
He's gone 2 years working on the railroad.
Right.
And oh my goodness, you just described through his voice, we hear it, we see the work that they do, we smell the places that all the men are sharing at night, you know. We eat, we drink, we sleep, we do, you know, everything with him because of it being in first person. We're getting his story. And I, as a reader, I kind of liked that Adam left and went to another location. I did wonder what would pull him back. And so that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. And his trip back that he tells us about is very interesting. So how fun to hear the words alive, aren't they? Just your writing is just wonderful.
Oh, thank you. And it's so wonderful. Yeah, I do feel so lucky to have these voice actors, just because I've always loved listening to audio. Growing up, I listened to a lot of audio drama and things like that, a lot of radio. And so to hear it in audio by such talented voice actors, it's just really a dream come true.
Yeah, I think you did a great job of creating the characters and taking them along. That one character in there, you know, I have so many killers that I like better than this particular character, but there was redemption for this character later on, and I understood why this particular character was kind of like,
Are you going to
like
tell
you
us
were.
who you mean, or are we going to just
Tell us or keep it a secret?
I don't know.
It's a secret.
I don't
we'll
know.
Entice people.
You could.
I had a problem with mom, you know. So I,
yes.
Thank you, Mom, for not being Sarai in our family. Thank you. We're ever grateful. Oh,
yeah,
but
so
you
that's...
draw her so magnificently. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Thank you.
And she would be a fabulous character to play, wouldn't she? Mm. Every actress's dream. Tell us about, I'm just going to call out a name. Tell us about Boots.
So Boots is a very minor character in this story, non-human character, I will say. But Boots is a little orange tabby cat. There's a scene in this story in which Penny and Adam, they're taking a walk. They're a little bit older at this point in the story. And they've kind of formed a friendship, and they're walking through or near the farmer's field, and they hear a meowing sound. And so Adam goes into the field to see what it is, and he discovers this little cute orange tabby, which he then gifts to Penny, and she becomes the kitten. I shouldn't say she, because the kitten's actually a boy. It's a tomcat. But this kitten is gifted to Penny, and then she has it for many years.
Yes, you write the animals in such a personal, authentic kind of way too, because we have a dog earlier with Adam, and I loved all of the scenes with the dog. Oh my goodness, I'm looking at time. Okay, we're going to take one more short break. We're going to step away for a word from another one of our sponsors, and that is OutWestShop.com. That is a business of Jim and mine, and it helps us support this show. So take a listen, and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back. We're talking with Elizabeth Rose in her book, Hagrid House.
I love seeing my novel held up.
Oh, you know, when you sit down to read this, make sure you have some blocks of time, because you will want to just keep reading, and you won't, and or just stay up all night, you know, whatever you need to do.
What a great endorsement.
Do you have a little process question? Do you have a favorite place to write, or a time you write, or does it make much difference?
I do. Actually, for whatever reason, I like to write in the morning. And if I don't write in the morning, it probably isn't going to happen. So I have a specific block of time. I know some writers, they write a certain word count, but I just have a specific block of time. And if I write 5 words, or if I write 500 words or 5,000, I don't think that's ever happened. I wish. But that's my block of time. And that's when I do my writing.
Yeah. So what are you working on next?
So next is kind of a not really sure what it's going to turn out to be in the end, but currently in its present state, it seems like it's sort of a time travel romance, and it's set in Rome. Ooh. In about, I think, 80 AD-ish, and has a cut into present time Los Angeles. So we'll see that it may not end up that way in the end state, but that's where it currently is at.
Can we sign up to be beta readers?
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to have you.
Do you ever get writer's block?
I would say I constantly have writer's block. I mean, that when I said sitting and writing five words, that wasn't a joke. I have actually sat and written five words during that block of time. But I guess I just have learned that I have to at least try. I have to at least put some words down, even if I don't like them, even if I don't think they're the best, because otherwise I would never finish anything.
Yeah. So it's just keep writing. I mean, just you just have to write something. You could write a recipe. I mean, you just have to write something, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like stale old bread.
Where the bread recipe came from. Yeah.
That's right.
Elizabeth, where can people find you and where can they find the book?
Yeah, so they can find me. I have a website, so it's elizabethrhodes.com. And I'm also on social media, Instagram and Facebook. You can search at Elizabeth Rhodes Author. And the book can be found a couple different places, but bookshop.org. And I believe you have a nice page where that's available. And also Amazon and online and Barnes & Noble. And it's in a couple of select bookstores as well.
Wonderful. Well, I think, Jim, you have a quote.
Well, I have a quote, yeah.
Jim's got a quote.
We got a quote. Now, this is our main character, Adam, and he's describing Hagrid House. Unlike the fresh lumbered frame houses in the village, ours was not evidence of Paul's carpentry. It was a plain rectangular build, like the old colonial homes. Some invisible force seemed to have compressed it inward, like a tightly cinched corset. The wide planks had shrunken and shriveled in the elements, and time had weathered the wood to a mossy gray. There were four windows, one in the front and one at the back of the sleeping attic, and two in the front lower story. All were covered in a thick layer of grime, blackening the view of the inside and giving the house an insidious presence.
Dun, dun, dun.
Have dinner. Oh, my goodness. This is a really great book.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth, for being with us. Again, this is episode 143. It'll be available again immediately after this live stream. And then you can find it on LA Talk Radio, on our rendezvous page on latalkradio.com. You can find it on our website, outwestshop.com, and then go to Live, Out West Live, drop down menu, and you can find it there. We've got it all over the place. And then it'll be up on Podbean. Next week, we are joined by author Matt Scott, and we'll be reading an espionage thriller set in contemporary times, Surviving the Lion's Den. It is the first book of a series of three. And so do join us next week. And we want to thank Elizabeth Rhodes, and we want to thank Sam Hassan, Alex Dormont, and the Hot Texas Swing Band, and all of you that tuned in tonight or will join us down the road. We really, really thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And do you have another last moment?
As we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing, and we'll
keep reading.
We'll see you down the trail. Have a great week. See you next week. Goodbye, Elizabeth.
Bye. Bye. Thank you so much for having me.